This is Dave.
Don White.
Thank you. Don, go ahead.
Yeah, I actually don't share some of Thomas's views on this. I actually think the licensing and the agreement should be mutually beneficial, and I think we should develop a model where programmers are respected. Often they are producing programming for a station at great personal sacrifice. That is to say, in our signal area, a classic example of this was the Larman music show. The whole resource came from their own collection of music and so on. And during a time when this governance was not in the position we're in now, they were told that they would have to relinquish rights, and they were unwilling to do that. It seems to me that we should respect the rights of producers who produce, but we should enter into agreements where we also benefit. And one of the benefits could be the absolute right for Pacifica to archive without restriction their programming. After all, they are using the facilities at our stations. But that we should also, I agree with David, the chair, that we should also be very clear that we respect them as a independent entity and a creative force that has a right to produce stuff that they retain some control over. But there can be a licensing and an agreement that's mutually beneficial, that we have access to what we need and archive it and be able to distribute it, but they also be able to do with their programming what they want to do. So I think there's a middle ground here. It's not one or the other.
This is Dave.
Thank you. Dave, go ahead.
And Bob,
yeah, just a second. Bob, are you there?
And LaVarne. This is LaVarne. I'd like to be recognized also.
Bob, and then Dave and LaVarne.
And LaVarne doesn't. And I'll yield.
Go ahead, Bob.
Thanks. Yeah, I just wanted to urge the board, before spending a lot more time debating this question about the rights of unpaid producers to their work, to wait and see the draft agreement that the Licensing and Distribution Task Force spent, I think, about 6 or 8 months, Rob, you can correct me, hashing out in great detail and covering many of the issues that, for instance, that Don just mentioned, which are legitimate issues. And I think it's a little premature for this kind of abstract theoretical discussion. It would be better to talk about it in the context of the specific. I also, just completely shifting to another part of Rob's report, and I really appreciate, Rob, all the work you've done, and I wanted to ask you about the PodSafe Music Archive as to whether the Creative Commons agreement that is contemplated would create the basis for later on for Pacifica to negotiate with those same musicians to distribute their music on a record label, if you will, that where there would be a revenue sharing between the musician and Pacifica, and sort of a win-win situation on CDs or on other form, or perhaps even through downloads. Has that topic come up in your discussions?
Were you addressing me, Bob?
Yes.
I dropped out for a minute, but yes, these topics have come up in the Licensing and Distribution Task Force. For example, the ability to archive the stuff is part of the agreement that we sent forward to the FCC Council. So we, as you pointed out, we spent 6 months going through all of this and gathering the input from actual unpaid staff that have been doing this stuff for decades. And it reflects the best wisdom of that group of people.
Thanks, Rob. But actually, I asked a different question, which is about the PodSafe Music Archive. I was asking whether your discussions with the Creative Commons and other people could allow an agreement that could pave the way for a Pacifica record label involving revenue sharing with the musicians that would create a win-win situation for either CD creation or digital downloads or other methods of distributing music.
Yeah, I absolutely think that it does. I mean, it's but it's predicated upon our ability to migrate the recording of this music to all of the stations, and it also has to do with Pacifica's ability to convince musicians that we're exposing them to audiences which are orders of magnitude larger than what they can get on a show at a particular station. So, yeah, I think this is the sort of thing that even the Future of Music Coalition people are interested in looking at developing. In other words, there's a lot of excitement in this area, and I think that a lot of the people that are working on behalf of artists or that are coalescing as Internet Archive is around developing content, or the Creative Commons people are around making sure that sharing of content in accordance with copyright laws takes place. All of these organizations want to work with an organization like Pacifica if we are committed to going in that direction. The trick for Pacifica is that direction is significantly different than the paradigm of the local stations that we have now.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you, Bob. We are at time, and we have, if the body doesn't mind, Laverne.
Point of order. I believe you have 10 more minutes. We
okay.
started at
yeah.
20.
Okay, go ahead, Laverne.
And
Rip Robbins, too.
And A.C. Bird.
Okay, go ahead, Laverne.
Okay, thank you, Rob. This is a wonderful report. And just curious, I see that you're completing your budget. Wonderful report and wonderful information in terms of us really discussing radio and future radio. But just want to know, you say you're completing a budget. Do you have some kind of preliminary number in terms of over the next 5 years, how much you're looking at in terms of start off? What are the numbers, the costs you think that will be needed for over the next, say, 2 to 3 to 5 years?
I think in terms of the hardware and software costs that we need to develop in an infrastructure, in the first year, I would say $50,000, and I'm probably, going to be wrong for a variety of reasons.
Okay.
What I don't know about Laverne is we at Pacifica are dreadfully understaffed in terms of having technical people and IT people that can help develop the medium so that it serves the listeners, serves the customers,
right?
Or even in our case, as we on the PNB have been users of Pacifica.org for years, and we haven't been able to get minutes and agendas and backup documents up on up on the website for a variety of reasons, but largely as a result of the fact that we don't have enough staff. So my sense is that the tricky part here is that the cost in future years for staffing this are going to be, on the order of $100,000 a year or maybe even larger as our audiences, aggregate. The good news to that is that if we can double our audience within a year by going on the Internet and taking Pacifica programming from all of the stations to a global audience, then I think we can raise orders of magnitudes of money more than we're raising right now to provide funding for those staffing positions. But until we actually get in an operational position to do that, Laverne, I don't think we're going to really be able to understand how much it's going to cost. What I do think is that I think as long as we can go to funders and tie infrastructure development to programming, tie infrastructure development to creating Pacifica as an actual, a media commonwealth on the Internet, as long as we can tie what we're asking for the infrastructure to the ability to finally take the Pacifica radio archives and make them available and searchable to everybody, then I think people will fund us at a higher level than than we've ever done before. But of course, we haven't gone and asked for those types of monies. So I would say the initial hardware and software costs for the first year are going to be $50,000, but the staffing costs for IT and technical services may be as high as $100,000 a year or more in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Lisa?
Again,
Margaret for the stack if there's time.
All right. Thank you for the report.
I'd like to speak to.
AC,
don't forget.
Thank you for the report. I'll be very brief, but just piggybacking off of the issue of music. This is more like an FYI. I just wanted to let people know. You might be aware, but NPR has certainly began to go that route, and they now have a music site and stuff like that. I think that it's just a great way of integrating, you know, reaching out to a younger and different audiences and bringing in, you know, issues of politics, because as we all know, there are a lot of people out there, independent people, doing some wonderful stuff that have difficulty getting their voices heard because, you know, it's political and not the same. I love you, you love me, and we're leaving and all that stuff. And one thing I just wanted to ask you about real quickly. When you were talking about, when you first started out with your report, you mentioned about the PodShape archive, and you mentioned something about a $400,000 grant. Could you just please repeat who received that $400,000 grant and what they're using it for?
Yeah, WFMU is a small station in Jersey City, New Jersey.
Okay.
And they got the money from the Rockefeller Philanthropy Advisors, and this is a result of a lawsuit in which, what was it, BMG, the big German corporation, and Sony mm-hmm. and others were ripping off, Dan, correct me, but basically the record companies were doing things they shouldn't have done, and Mark, the U.S. Attorney in New York, wasn't it? David?
Yes.
The lawsuit that got the money, you know, from the big record companies for New York. What was the hustle that the record companies were engaged in? I've forgotten.
It was Paola.
Yeah, it was Paola.
It was Paola, okay. Thank you, Bob. It was a Paola scam, and as a result of that, they gave money back to the state of New York, and the Rockefeller Philanthropy Advisors, surprise, surprise, got their hands on it and doled it out, and WFMU, which has been doing internet broadcasting since 1997, believe it or not, and has had a PodSafe library at least since 2001, put a bid in, and they got $400,000. So all that's meant to say is that Pacifica, with five stations, we could begin recording music and gathering music, you know, at a similar rate, even though we're behind the curve. And I think the point of all this is that once we put together a PodSafe music archive, we can share it with WFMU. FMU will share their music with us right now.
Okay, thank you.
So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Rip? Rip?
Well, thank you. Yes, I just wanted to say that this report really outlines a strategic plan for advancing the foundation here of current technology, and I'd like to point out the extent of research that's been done in terms of getting information that we need. And it's evidenced in this report with all the talking to the variety of people who know about this matter and can help us get there. So I just want to say thanks to the member who demonstrated his competence with this topic, and I'm glad we made the decision to have him work on this project. And I look forward to the next report. Thanks, Rob, for your work.
Well, thank you,
Bruce. Is he?
I join in that.
Thank you.
Yeah, first of all, I want to congratulate you, Rob, for a job well done. There is some questions, though, that perhaps you could elaborate on, and that is what the program is having a rights to their own product and doing it on the Pacifica Airways. What does Pacifica get from this in layman term? What does Pacifica get from this, and why is it that Pacifica can't assess that product? I mean, what is the...
Well, I think the point of it, AC, is that is that we have five local stations now which are all successful in their local markets, but we're competing globally. And by putting together the content from all of the Pacifica stations and making it available to broader audiences, I think people are going to be able to see more of what Pacifica really has to offer. And I'm not trying to gainsay any of the content from any of the local stations, but we really have some local station shows that are extraordinary, that people can't hear. You know, Margaret Prescott, you know, had an unprecedented interview with Mumia, and, you know, I think that was a coup for Pacifica. But it wasn't something that could be heard on all of the stations. So the point of this is that many of our listeners in all of our signal areas don't hear what's available on other stations. People throughout the continental United States that aren't in an area that's served by a Pacifica station do not hear what we have, so they're not likely to go and stream a website. And people all over the world don't hear Pacifica content. So what Pacifica is going to have to do is be more aggressive in taking the Pacifica brand, which still goes back to the 50s and the 60s, you know, when you had people like Bill Mandel basically confronting the House Un-American Activities Commission, or Bertrand Russell or James Baldwin with the Civil Rights Movement. Pacifica can take the brand that it's always had since it was created and make a stronger case for itself with a global audience, and that's what we're trying to do. The other thing that I would just like to remind everybody about here is that this is not things like the PodSafe archive. I spent a couple of hours on the phone earlier today with Lori Taguma from WOJB in Wisconsin, who basically says, you know, we have some concerts here, and we want to record these concerts on Creative Commons license. How is that going to impact us? How can we use it to get our names, you know, and our programming before a broader audience? And that's what this is really all about, is it's not just Pacifica blowing its own horn. It's the fact that Pacifica has affiliate stations that are creating programming that's of interest to audiences that are not just local and regional and national, but are global. I mean, imagine if we had a Pacifica webcast that had a stream for Indigenous Peoples programming.
Can I make an answer to that, please? Also,
sure. We are at time here, and we are two people.
Very quick,
go ahead, Dave.
If we have proprietary rights, we are responsible for every bit of distribution that happens. That allows you to capture every bit of revenue, true, but you're restricted in how far it goes. Sites like YouTube, MySpace, and the rest have shown that allowing the broadest possible distribution with the fewest possible restrictions, the fewest possible restrictions get you the broadest dissemination. And our model is we want as many people as possible to tune in, and we want the opportunity to pitch to them. So what we get out of it is broader distribution than would be available if we had proprietary restrictions on it, so a larger audience to whom to pitch. And secondarily, we get a large number of resource partners who are willing to contribute their resources to an effort that enlarges a media commonwealth and enlarges civic media, who would not be willing to donate to an effort for us just to build ourselves as an institution, because pretty much all the ideas that we're presenting are available very broadly otherwise, and their interest in funding is the broadest possible dissemination of those ideas, which won't happen in the proprietary model. So that's what we get out of it.
Thank you, Dave. Next, Margaret, we are time, so please, if you can wrap it up in about within 5 minutes. Margaret?
Yeah, just very quickly, thanks. I think this is a really fantastic report. It's very concrete. One of the few concrete things that I think we've been able to achieve as the board. What I think that my questions will likely be answered when we get a bit more clarification on what types of contracts we're talking about, because I'm trying to get some understanding about exactly what the relationship is or how would it work, giving programmers, let's say like myself, control over my own material, i.e. could I go out and sell it somewhere or what, and the relationship between that and getting the Pacifica brand, as you just described, out in a, you know, in a wider network, and how do we protect ourselves as Pacifica from people really exploiting that. I'm sure that you've thought about this, and perhaps these kinds of issues are addressed in the kind of contract that you're talking about, but I did want to raise it because that is an area of concern of mine.
Thank you very much, Margaret. We have time, and this item is exhausted.
Thank you. Actually, I just wanted to say something while we're on the public stream that the ED has proposed the extension of this contract with Rob as digital distributor for 1 month, and the board is going to need to deliberate on that question and, again, do a finding on conflict of interest. And just so everybody recalls, by definition, there's a conflict of interest. The board would have to do a finding that says that it is nonetheless in the best interest of the foundation, that similar services could not be found without with reasonable effort. And actually, I can read it. But the bylaws have the provisions that say basically we find that it is in the interest of the foundation to do this, and we'll be doing that in the executive session. Okay.
Oh, thank
the next
you.
Item
point
is
of information, please, Mr. Where do we get? We've already kind of gone over time on this item and a little bit on the other one. Where does the time come from? Since we're at time certain.
We're at time.
We're now moving.
Well, we're
to
over
the,
time. Yes, by about.
Oh, we're moving to the motion regarding the UPSO recognition, and at 7:45, even despite our rule of order, 2/3 can move to extend. Let us move straight into that now, if we may. So can you call, first of all, I think we have a choice whether we want to have background first or whether the board would like, where we have our guests to each present their cases, or would the board care to entertain a specific motion prior to hearing from them and then take up the motion after we've heard the motion that's being put forward on this?
Ms. Sherman?
Davis.
Yes, sir.
I think we should hear from the parties, and so we can be appraised of the circumstances, and before we entertain any motion.
Is there general assent that we'll hear from the representatives prior to deliberating on the motion?
Bob.
Yes, Bob.
I agree with that, except just to refresh all the board members' memories and also those who may be listening, I would just ask permission to simply read the one-sentence motion before that so everyone understands the context of what we'll be voting on.
Okay. Is there any objection? Go ahead, Bob.
Okay. Resolved that the Pacifica National Board directs the Executive Director to instruct the KPFA Interim General Manager to reinstate management recognition of the unpaid staff organization as the designated representative of the KPFA unpaid staff.
Thank you.
And Margaret.
Dave, this is Ray. I have a question.
Should I be dialing people in right now?
Yes, you should.
Okay.
Ray and then Margaret.
Yeah, well, I have a quick question.
I was just seconding the motion.
Okay. We're not considering it now. Bob was doing that for informational purposes. But thank you. Yes, Ray.
Yes, you mentioned people getting a background. Who would give us the background if we exactly do
that? We're going to be having, as I understand it, two representatives from the unpaid staff organization that were elected by that organization to represent them on this call. And we're also going to be hearing from Lem Lem and a member of the staff, who she's also requested to be present to provide some additional information. And we'll alternate between them.
Okay, thanks.
I have one quick question.
Yes.
Do we know if there's been any movement on this since our PNB meeting in person?
Asking Lem Lem to give us an update is the first thing.
Okay.
We'll find out from Mary. Lem Lem, are you here yet? Is there some mystical process by which she's going to join us, or is there some particular person who is in charge of calling her?
Well, did Chandra not say she was calling people? I don't know who she is. Who is she calling?
Dave, I believe Chandra just said she would call the UPSO people, so perhaps someone else
should. Dan, can you contact Lem Lem, please?
Yes, I'll be happy to.
Thank you. While we're waiting, can any of the Berkeley reps inform us as to where this sits right now? Give us any update?
Well, we have had, the UPSO has had two meetings, I guess, since our September in-person meeting. And
Sharam, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, we have one person dialing in because I wasn't able to conference in two people simultaneously.
That's fine.
Oh, okay.
That's fine. This is our public session number.
So we, one of the things that had been said at some point along the line in the past few months is that it would be a good thing if we had
020
recognition from the good code. If we had people from the unpaid staff who wished to say that they were in favor or not of the organization as it exists. And we have had a number of people who have signed on and said, I don't have the total, but we'll hear about it when we get the unpaid staff reps. I think they have the final total of however many names, however many people signed on saying we did want to continue with this organization.
Could people speak up louder, Mary? Talk louder.
I'm not loud enough. Okay.
Not for me.
I'm not sure what to do with this phone. I'll do the best I can with it. It's not my usual phone. Anyway, we've had people that we've had two meetings. We've had interest from the meetings have been attended with a fairly wide range of people, newcomers who didn't know anything about it, people like me who've been there since the beginning, and all kinds of people in between. I would say there are generally positive things with people saying why they want to have the organization and we'd like to continue with it. And people have signed on, and I don't know how many. We'll probably hear from the reps to tell us how many signatures.
Okay, well,
so,
as long as we have them here, well, I think we should probably go to them first. I want Lem Lem first to give us an update, but if she's not on the line, I think we'll go to the UPSO representative first. And Chandra, could you introduce our guest?
Okay, we have Sharam, and do we also have Anthony?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Welcome. And what we'd like, given the amount of time that we have to deal with it, if you could each keep your comments to about 3 minutes, four at the maximum, we'd appreciate it. And I'm going to alternate between the UPSO folks and the management folks. So while we're waiting for Lem Lem, well, actually, you know what? No, I think we need to wait because I think Lem Lem needs to hear whatever's being said from the other side. Dan, are you back yet? Unfortunately.
I have a point of information, Mr. Chair. This time is going by, and I don't think this should be part of the item. We can't, I hate to see this time.
Our rule of order specifies a given time. At that time, we'll move to extend time, and it'll take two-thirds.
I have a point of order.
Yes.
Not point of order. Point of inquiry. Why does the National Board, the executive director, or the general manager have to recognize this organization?
That's not what the motion.
No, it's a point of inquiry that's reasonable.
I thought that's what the motion was saying, directing somebody to recognize. What's necessary about that? Why does this organization have to be recognized?
Bob, can you clarify?
Sure. I think you'll hear when the representatives speak about the role of their organization that they have taken on the role that is in some ways parallel to a labor union in a traditional workplace, but they represent directly the interests of the unpaid staff. A whole series of very concrete issues about the regulation of the station and of programming, and they have the right to representation on the program council. They have certain other rights as far as elections. So there's a whole set of relationships and responsibilities and privileges that accrue to recognition by management, and conversely that are withdrawn if management revokes that recognition. So it is very critical.
Also,
it is a very critical policy issue as to how the National Board believes station management should deal with the organizations of, chosen by the workers.
Bob, I'm sorry, I blanked for a moment. Did you mention the fact that their voting rights is determined by this recognition?
I mentioned it in passing, but actually now under the bylaws since 2003, the organizations like, and the acronym is UPSO, and the similar one at WBAI, are explicitly mentioned that they are stations where management recognizes them. Those organizations determine membership for purposes of voting for the LSB by staff.
Mr. Chair, may I add one more?
Hang on. The reason that is significant, Tom, is because it also defines them as a class of members of the foundation, and the basis of the local advisory board lawsuit, and actually the other lawsuits that came in afterward, was that it is illegal to lose the voting of a class of members without their consent. Now, the question Dan could answer whether this represents a class of members as opposed to just a specific group of people, which may be a different thing. But basically, the bylaws specify that the management, in order to get them these rights, they have to be part of a management-recognized union where those exist. Mary, did you want to clarify that?
Dan is getting...
Do you want me to?
Dan, okay. Go ahead. Yes.
Well, I mean, I think you're right. Our bylaws say that in order for unpaid staff to be subject to a rule that's different than the bylaw rule for voting in elections, they have to be at a station where management has recognized an unpaid staff organization and where its bylaws provide for a different recognition or different recognition formula.
Go ahead, sir.
Hello,
Dan. One of the reasons that I hear people talk about is that we have this unpaid staff organization at different stations, and they have different rules even becoming for membership.
I'm doing fine. I'm in the middle of this. Story.
Is that determined by the management or each UPSO organization?
Okay.
What if my UPSO organization says, well, all you have to do is work for 15 minutes out of 12 months? I'm just making it up. Let's suppose that I come up with that. And the UPSO organization says, yeah, that's what we want. And if they are not uniform across our network here, what? How do we deal with that?
I believe Dan was distracted speaking.
Dan?
I'm sorry. I didn't realize that was a question addressed.
That was
is Lemon on the phone? Point of information. Margaret, what are we doing here in terms of this agenda?
Yeah.
I thought we were to hear from Lem and also
exactly.
Representatives of the
right.
Excuse me. Point of information, not entitled somebody to the floor until they're recognized, and I am exhausted, so I'm going to be a little bit biting about being recognized because the crosstalk gets too difficult.
And Margaret, may I be recognized?
Go ahead.
I'd like some clarification in terms of where we are on the agenda. Has Lem been reached and the two representatives from KPFA unpaid staff? I thought that was how we were proceeding, but it seems as though we're proceeding with a discussion without hearing from the representatives of KPFA.
And to clarify, we're waiting to hear from Lem. As soon as she gets on, we'll go doing that. I did not want the representatives from KPFA to present their issues without her being here to hear it and vice versa. So we're conducting a discussion answering Thomas's point of information about why it's before us in the way it's before us while we're waiting for Lem to pop on.
Okay, thank you. It was just a little unclear what was happening.
Mr. Chair, a point of... I think it's a point of order. That's we were talking about like a question like that or general background, but I think that Sarf's question is getting into the part of the discussion that I don't think it's appropriate to be getting. That's not the same thing. He's discussing the merits of the motion, as and he's offering an example which is an extreme case, 15 minutes in 12 months, and asking would this be all right. I think this is not part of the background, the general background that we agreed to be talking about without the reps present, because I think many things could be said to that. But there's nobody here to be authorized to be saying them, so I would respectfully ask that that kind of discussion and the pros and cons be deferred until we get to that point in the discussion after we have heard from people.
And I think I'm hearing somebody dial in. Is that Lem Lem?
Yes, I'm on.
Okay, perfect. That's perfect. Your timing is impeccable. So what we'd like to do, Lem Lem, is have you describe to us first where things stand with respect to since recognition of UPSO, and then what we're going to do is we're going to alternate and hear from the UPSO folks and the management perspective. And if you could limit your comments to no more than 3 or 4 minutes at the outset, that would be very helpful because we're limited on time.
Avenue.
And you're welcome to start. If you could update us on where things stand right now. And we have Anthony and Shahram with us, I believe.
Is there anyone else? Right.
Hi, Salama. So, should I go on?
Please do.
Okay.
And first, before we start, thank you to all of you for being here. We really appreciate you taking the time.
Am I supposed to call Serge Morel, who got on earlier? I took his number. Or somebody else?
I'll do it. I'd like you to just start.
Okay. Since the PNB meeting in Berkeley, there hasn't been any activity in terms of determining what to do next. My hope is that, as I said at the meeting, the unpaid staff, the folks that are trying to organize the unpaid staff, would figure out a process by which to get the majority, the 50% of the unpaid staff to decide that they want to be represented by APSO, so that the management can recognize the organization and proceed to determine how to move forward. I think there had been a couple of meetings held by unpaid staff or by the folks that are trying to organize unpaid staff. I'm not sure. I haven't heard any reports on what came from those meetings. I don't know what was discussed and what work has been done on the side of unpaid staff.
Can you just clarify, as matters stand right now, what is the status of recognition or lack of recognition of UPSO by management?
The management position in terms of recognition hasn't changed. As Mr. Siegel was referring to it at the PNB meeting, I think he gave it the proper language, which is calling to question. So I believe what I've done is call to question whether unpaid staff want to be represented by APSO, because unpaid staff have not been participating in APSO for a long time. And those that they had elected to represent them as their council members have not called a meeting, have not formed an election committee, have not attempted to elect representatives to different bodies, which I was forced to basically call to question and create this very unpleasant issue to be dealt with. It's an issue that needs to be dealt with. I want us to all work to resolve it. I don't believe it's my problem or the problem of unpaid staff or people who are trying to organize unpaid staff. It's just an issue that the foundation collectively needs to resolve. And I'm hoping at the end of this meeting we can agree on a resolution. Not necessarily just to say recognize, unrecognize, that's not the issue. The issue is, are unpaid staff at KPFA organized? And do they want to be represented by an organization called the unpaid staff organization? I don't believe, and I have enough reasons to not believe so. And I think the right way and the proper way of going about it would be to find out from them whether they want to be represented by APSOL and what kind of representation they want. What is it that they want to be represented by APSOL about? Like, what are the issues? But before we can even get to the issues that concern unpaid staff or the issues that unpaid staff through their representatives can negotiate with management to resolve, we have to establish an unpaid staff organization. So basically what I have done, even though the derecognition, decertification, these are very loaded words that are very inflammatory, but what needs to happen is unpaid staff, if they want an organization, they have to organize. People who have very good intentions and who want unpaid staff to be organized can try to organize unpaid staff, but they can't claim that they are the unpaid staff organization. That it would be irresponsible for me as a manager to accept that.
Okay. Thank you. Who would Sharama or Anthony like to start?
I can reply to that. I'm Anthony Fust. I'm a LSB member and a newscaster here at KPFA. I would note that the period that the IGM is referring to, when the UPSO was indeed not meeting, that coincides with most of her term as interim general manager. And all that while, I'm not aware of anything was being said and done about that lack of activity by the UPSO.
Actually, could I interject here, Anthony, because I think that is inaccurate, and I'll come back on that later on.
Who was that?
Oh, this is Serge Morel.
Yeah, I want to let each person who's presenting their statements complete in their entirety without interruption.
And as you've seen in the timelines, which were sent to you in the email early this morning, up and through this past May, management was communicating with the UPSO council members, even though the UPSO council wasn't meeting nor calling membership meetings. It was only in August, when the organization was finally in the process of reactivating itself, did management take note of the previous inaction and use that as a rationale for withdrawing recognition from the organization. Indeed, if you look at that timeline in the email I sent out, you'll see that ballots for our election were actually in voters' hands when the manager sent out the derecognition memo, and now we're hearing yet another story. This existential issue of
all of us.
You know, how under what circumstances should an UPSO exist? Well, that's decidedly ahistorical. I think at Pacifica, I think we should pride ourselves on paying attention to history. This organization has existed for 17 years or so. Mary Berg knows more about its early history, because I haven't been here for 17 years.
Longer than that.
But, okay, Mary says it's longer than that. And I don't know that management has ever reacted this way before, and yet out of the blue, without previous consultation, and contradicting their communications right up through this past May, they suddenly said the UPSO hasn't met for a year and a half or 2 years, and therefore I, the interim general manager, am withdrawing recognition. And again, there's no mention, even in that memo of August, about this issue of you know, what does it take to for the staff members to want to be represented? Do we have to justify the organization? So, in answer to the member who was speaking earlier, I would say the point of the resolution which is before you, as well as the point of the resolution which our LSD passed in August by a substantial majority and no one voting no, this is simply to restore the status quo ante, to put things back where they were before August the 13th. So I think it's, oddly enough, I think it's actually a conservative idea that simply puts things back the way they are, and let's, you know, if the manager would like to initiate a discussion along these lines, then by all means we can do so, but let's not strike and change things and then say, oh, now we can have a discussion. Now that I've upset the apple cart, now we'll discuss the issue. I let the discussion precede the action, and then let the decision-making be participatory. This unfortunately, has been a recurring theme for these past 2 years of decisions foisted upon the staff and the discussion coming later rather than beforehand. This was just another one of these out-of-the-blue surprises. Another one was the CAB appointments. Another one was the suspension of the program council. Another was the calls to action. So,
I have an objection. Mr. Chair, can we stay focused on the issue ahead? I don't know anything about CAB appointments, suspension of council. Let's just stay on this issue.
I second that. I do understand how it's relevant, but I think the member's right. I think we need to deal with this issue.
Okay, I won't mention those matters again. But simply to say that this action was not unique.
Okay, Serge, would you like to?
Yes.
Done, Anthony, was there anything?
Yes, that's fine for the moment.
Okay, Serge.
Yeah, that's what I want to ask. I emailed to the PMB mail address this morning a copy of a petition outlining the problems that unpaid staff identified with the last election, and I think this was part of what caused concern for management about how the election was conducted. And I want to find out if members of the PNB actually have received that.
Yes, we did.
Under what name it was sent?
It would be sent under my wife's name, which is Juanita Fryer.
Juanita? How do you spell that?
Juanita.
Yeah.
Nita Fryer.
Juanita.
It doesn't
Nita
say
Fryer,
Juanita
right.
On here.
Oh, it's Nita.
Nita Fryer, yes.
Okay, I got it. Thank you.
The history and the dysfunction of what happened with the unpaid staff organization, and I was elected as an unpaid staff organization rep several years back, I think can be attributed to the fact that of the five stations that are represented on the Pacifica network, the unpaid staff organization is out of sync with membership or what is classified as unpaid staff, with a 30-hour over 12 months qualification as opposed to 30 hours over 3 months, which basically is 2.5 hours a month work at the station qualifies you for UPSO as an unpaid staff member. And the beginning of my term, we came across a situation where there were people who were claiming to be unpaid staff. Most of them belonged to collectives, and it was impossible to verify their veracity, and the meetings just became a deluge of abuse, verbal abuse and insults, and the organization decided to take over the unpaid staff organization. We diligently attempted to hold monthly meetings for over a year, and at that time we had other management that were at the station. They would not give us any support in combating this problem, so the only way, the only safe way for us to proceed was to stop a meeting. And I see a lot of noise in the background. As a result, it was impossible for UPSO to function under those circumstances. With all our terms well overdue, I think it was probably time for a new election to be formed. But unfortunately, as we pointed out in the letter, some of the problems with the process which called into question the legitimacy of the whole election process. And as I think it's been stated before, had this election process, which some of the points of the problem are pointed here, had been undertaken for an LSB election, there's no way these results would have been recognized.
And that's one concern. Just to make a point, I'm not here representing management's views, but I'm online to express the concerns of many staff who feel that UPSO does not represent the unpaid staff at the station, and primarily because of the fact that with membership at 30 hours over 12 months, it becomes increasingly difficult to verify who is truly unpaid staff, and it leaves the unpaid staff organization to be taken up by groups of people who, under other stations, wouldn't qualify as unpaid staff.
Okay. Sharam?
Yes, thank you. I want to thank the board, actually, to give us the time to present our views. I appreciate this on a Friday night coming up. I want to say something. You know, I was born and raised in a country where the issue of having the labor being able to organize its own organizations and unions was vital. And even though it had a militant, very militant labor force and group of workers, but it was most of the time in the history of that country, the issue of labor union has been banned. You know, they have been banned by the government. So this is an issue very dear to my heart. It's very close to my heart. I want to make that point very clear. That's why I'm here tonight. And I wanted to just say something at some of the points. I think it's important to decouple the two issues. One is the issue of whether there was a recognized unpaid staff organization in this in KPFA. The other issue is whether or not this last election was a perfect election. See, I think by mixing the two, the main issue, which is the issue of recognition and derecognition, becomes sort of murky. It becomes obscure and unclear. So I think I'm going to stick to that issue of basically the recognition. As my co-worker here mentioned, up until May of 22nd, when we did meet, you have the timeline with you, hopefully. As of last May, on May 7th, when we did meet with the management, the May 22nd meeting as actually was unilaterally cancelled by the manager. Mm-hmm. The manager's email, the IGM email, was clearly calling us the OPSO Council. She recognized that there was such a thing as unpaid staff organization. So obviously we had a meeting with her in that capacity, and she uses the word, you know, in that capacity. So in that meeting, I want to mention this, that it's ironic that Serge would actually come and argue as somebody who was elected for an officer or council member of unpaid staff organization. He would argue against the bylaws of unpaid staff organization at this point. And I think that is the problem. Serge and two of other council members did not fulfill their duties and obligations as council members. They did not, as many efforts, and I have emails to prove these things, and I think I'll be happy to provide you with all this documentation. These three members did not respond to my calls for having a meeting. I could not call a meeting on my own because you need a quorum of three people to meet. So it put you on a catch-22 situation. You wouldn't call a meeting because you don't want the organization to continue. By virtue of that, as far as I'm concerned, these council members have abdicated the positions, and they made it actually very clear. Two of them that I met with, Lemlem and I and Sasha Lili, the interim general manager, met on May 7th. Serge made it very clear that he did not think that OPSO should be in a position to determine eligibility of the unpaid staff. And that is exactly in contradiction to the bylaws of the unpaid staff organization. And he also made other points about how the management should appoint, or the department should appoint our representatives to program council, which is another thing that is enshrined in our bylaws. So Sterge and his other two colleagues, basically by virtue of opting for these positions and not calling for meetings and not responding to my calls for meetings, they practically abdicated their position. And an honorable thing for them would have been to say, well, we resign, let's have another election. And that was exactly what I was asking them to do, to just meet one more time to call for an election. However, they intentionally did not do that. For a while, I was under the impression that this issue of not having safe work environment and not a safe place to meet was the real issue. Then later on, these people were gone from the station, you know, this group of people who were disrupting the meetings. Nonetheless, Serge and his two other colleagues and my other two colleagues, they still refuse to meet. So this issue of disruption of meetings was used, to me, and we have come to this conclusion that it was used as a pretext to do exactly what the interim general manager did in August, to dismantle or to de-recognize OPSO as an organization. And I'll be very honest with you. You could look at my timelines that I prepared. I do mention that, and this is important, that part of the responsibility for having and not having a safe work environment lies with the management of the station. At that point, as I mentioned, there was a turbulence in the station because the former manager was leaving. We did consult, we did ask for the person who was in charge in the transition period, the business manager of KPFL, Louis Weather, to do something about it. And she consulted Greg Guma, a former ED, and former ED basically said, put the back right back in our court. So, in other words, the station did not do its share of providing a safe place to meet for its staff. So I don't think, even if Serge's argument is completely, I mean, the reason for them not to meet had to do with that, then the responsibility doesn't just lie with the unpaid staff organization. The station has to take some responsibility for it, too.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir. Hang. What is it? We are about to be at time, so we're going to move.
You got 4 minutes.
Oh, because, I think I should be an opportunity to respond to Sharon.
Bob's motion was that this would be over at 10:45.
I understand, and I was right on top of it, and I was just about to say we are going to proceed to a motion and a vote without a motion to extend time. It will require
a point of order. I have a point of order.
Point of order?
We dealt with this in the meeting when we were in Berkeley. I don't see, first, I think Bob's motion, I mean, is forcing the management to do something that we dealt with. And it sounds like both parties didn't do what they were supposed to do. It sounds
it's
like
the point of order is not well taken. We agreed that we would have this discussion at this meeting and would delay any action.
I'm not talking about the discussion. Why are we voting on a motion that's ignoring what we put down when we were in Berkeley? We took plenty of time on it, and we made clear that the organization ought to have their election and that the management ought to accept that. And so if they don't have an election and the management is still playing games, it seems like nobody's doing their job. Why are we voting on something? The local station board did this.
The motion that you made in regard did not pass at the PNB meeting. The motion
I didn't make
passed.
A motion. We said as a board what should be done. My point is, we said it as a board, and there was nobody disputing that the collective should be recognized. But if there were any problems, they ought to just have their election and step forward. They're still talking about they ought to be recognized, and Limlim's still talking about, well, they haven't done anything. It doesn't sound like anybody's trying to move.
The motion was to postpone the item. It was Ray LaForest's motion, I believe, to postpone till this meeting, and that's what we're doing. The point of order is not well taken. Is there a motion to extend time? Failing that, we're going to
extend time.
I move to extend time for 10 minutes.
Oh, am I audible now, Mr. Chair?
10 minutes? Marv.
Oh. I move to extend for 15.
Yeah, I'm stepping.
Okay. Is there objection to an extension of 15 minutes?
Yes.
Okay,
Mr. Chair, can you please tell me if I'm audible now or on mute?
Yes, you're audible.
I can't hear you, so I can't answer the question.
Oh, okay. Well, I can't hear me either. Okay. Someone had to say. Okay. So now we are going to vote on whether to extend time 15 minutes.
Any objections?
Yes, there are objections. We're going to a vote.
We had already lost more than that just with noises and interference. All right. Yeah. All right.
Is there any objection to extending time, Mr. Chair?
Yes, some did, so we'll take more time to do this. Okay. Mary Burke says yes. Evelyn Bethune? Okay, I'll come back to you. Lydia Brazon?
No.
What?
A.C. Bird? Okay, I'll come back to you, too. Lisa Davis?
Yes.
Chandra Halpman?
Yes.
Ray LaForest? Okay.
Yes.
You vote yes. Okay, thank you. Ambrose Lane?
No.
Rod Lederer?
Yes.
Barnett Prescott? I'll come back to you. #1 to unmute. Sarv Randhawa.
No.
Sandra Wildline. Rob Robinson. I'll come back to you. Rip Robbins.
No.
Thomas Ruffin.
I said no.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I didn't get that. That was Rob speaking. All right. Thomas Ruffin.
Yes.
Wendy Schrill.
Yes.
Lori Naguma. I'm sorry. I'll come back to you. I didn't hear that. Don White. Don White. Okay, I'll come back to you. LeVarne Williams.
Yes.
Don White.
Wood.
Don, yes. White votes yes.
Thank you. Michael Woodson.
Yes.
Okay. Lydia Brezon.
I previously voted no.
Oh, wait, you voted no. I'm sorry. Evelyn Bethune is the one.
I think Lydia is allowed to vote.
Oh, of course she is.
Yes, of course.
Point of order.
I don't have a square here to mark it down. Evelyn,
point of order. Mr. Chair, if people don't vote the first time, they're not on the call, do we have to reread the names a second time and take more time up?
Yes, people are muted.
It's a matter of privilege to the secretary, who has had to do this a lot and has developed a way of doing it that's efficient.
Thank you,
okay.
Mary. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's also been done since the beginning.
Mary, go ahead.
Okay, Evelyn Bethune. A.C. Bird. I say, wait, I'm sorry. Yes, A.C. Bird. I didn't hear from you. Okay. Margaret Prescott. I don't hear from her either. Lori Taguma. I don't hear from her.
I'm sorry. I missed the motion.
Is there anyone here whose name was not called? Who wants to vote? One, two.
Did you call Laurie?
I'm sorry.
I thought I heard Laurie come on. Did you get her?
I can't.
I'm told
I can't be asking people to. So I don't know. I don't know what Laurie said. What did you vote, Laurie?
I missed the motion. I had to leave for a minute.
Okay.
It's whether to extend time for further discussion of this issue.
Oh,
it's not
okay.
Time.
Sure. Yeah, that's fine.
You're voting yes?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
All right. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Yes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, no. So we extend the time.